Hey everybody, welcome back to the Matt and Joe Woodworking Fun Hour. This is Matt. Say hi, Joe.
Hey guys.
Yeah, I hope everyone's doing pretty well. We are back. This is going to be episode
four.
Four? Really?
Yeah, four. We made it to four.
We made it to four.
Nobody took us off the internet yet.
I haven't punched you in the gut yet.
No.
Yeah. I was going to say something else, but I didn't. So last episode we talked about design, and the next thing that we're going to do is going to go to the lumber yard and we're going to help Joe get lumber, but that's not what we're going to talk about this time. This time we have a very special guest on.
Very special guest.
Very, very special. He's
the blushing.
Person we asked. He was the first person to say yes. All the way from Texas, a newly minted U.S. citizen.
Oh, congratulations.
Phil Morley.
Hey. Yay.
How's it going, Phil?
Good. 10th person, huh?
Yeah.
I know that's a lie because you don't have 10 friends.
I definitely do not.
Ouch.
I was probably the second person, right? Come on.
Third. Definitely third.
Definitely the third.
Yeah. All right, I'll take it.
Okay. So,
you're doing good, guys.
What we're going to do today is talk to Phil about designing furniture. Phil is a fantastic designer. In fact, I first came across Phil on Instagram, and I remember seeing the Phil Morley rocker. Is that what you call it, the Morley rocker?
Yeah, I'm not very good at names, so most things are just called starts with Morley. So yeah, Morley rocker.
It's not that you're not good with names, it's just you're tremendously self-absorbed.
Yes, all that.
You were in an article that I wrote about choosing lumber. Right? You remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh,
yeah.
So we're coming full circle.
How the pros select lumber or something like that.
Yeah, what they think about when they buy lumber, because it's not board feet.
It's not.
Right? No. So unfortunately, that's not what we're talking about today, Phil. So,
dang it. I was just going to read the article.
Yeah. Yeah. Try to refresh your memory.
Right.
So we're going to talk about designing furniture, and we're going to ask you questions, and you can ask me questions if you'd like to. You can ask Joe questions if you'd like to.
Don't ask me any question. I don't know anything.
Joe knows a lot about making fried chicken.
And photographs. That's about it.
Yeah.
And even the photographs might be questionable.
Yes. So to bring you up to speed, what we're doing is Joe and I are each individually designing a tea cabinet.
Awesome.
And I'm going to help Joe refine his design. And then we're going to go to the lumber yard and we're going to pick out lumber for it. And then we're going to make them together. And that's like the, so sort of where the podcast is heading. So at this point,
cool.
Yeah, we're still talking about design. And I guess my first question for you, because I've seen quite a bit of your work, both in photographs, but also in person. And I know what I do when I have to start designing a piece of furniture. And I'm just curious, what is the first thing that you think about or that you do when you sit down to design a piece of furniture?
I get really high.
Deposit that security check that you got.
Does that you? Do you think that pot helps? You don't get
pot,
stoned.
Yes. No, I don't get stoned.
I know you don't.
No, I wish. No. You know, it's funny because I kind of put it in two categories. If I'm designing for my business, and if I'm just designing for something I want to build 100% out of pleasure. And it's kind of weird because my clients are coming to me because they want me to design a piece for them. So in a way, I am still designing my piece, but it's odd. When it's for a client, it's a little bit different. It's not as free and fun as just going in the shop with a concept and an idea and just building it for me. So typically where it starts is with the client.
So you have a client come in and they say, I want, let's say, a desk or a chair or whatever.
Yep.
Is it common for your clients to give you design parameters?
Not really. Only things they usually give me is the size. You know, they're looking for order, maybe not even that. They say, you know, I want a table. It's got to be a six-seater. They may have an idea in the wood. A lot of times it's more just the color, like they want it to be dark or light. And then, you know, they don't, if someone comes to me and they, you know, they show me a picture and they're like, hey, I want this built, I'm not typically going to do that. Right now, clients typically come to me because they've seen some of my work. So they're asking for me to kind of do my thing, give me free range with the design.
And most of those people are stoned.
Which is awesome. I only do work for hippies in Austin. So it's fantastic. They think I can design, and that's okay. But they do give me some information. Each case is a little bit different. Like, I think the worst thing would be is someone just come to me and say, I want a cabinet, just build me one. Like, I need some direction.
What kind of cabinet? And
yeah, the function, right?
Or where it's going to live.
Where's it going? What kind of cabinet? What kind of woods? Okay, you like clean line stuff? Are you mid-century modern? Are you a little more shaker? But at that point, they already know somewhat what I do. So we'll just start from there. It's like, okay, you want a table? You want it clean lined? What kind of wood do you want? I'm not someone that's going to design or let the wood necessarily talk to me. I'm just going to try to guide the client and at the same time educate them a little bit. Because sometimes they will come to you and most clients think everything's stained. So I'll try to guide them the best I can. I try to guide them to do what I want to do at the end of the day. I mean, that's really what it's about.
That's amazing. Yeah. I was just going to ask you, how often do you... Do you get your client to diverge from their original, or like if they're like, oh, I want this in walnut, and you're like, well, that might be cost prohibitive or that doesn't work. How often does it vary from where they originally start?
Not often, because a lot of times they don't really know when they come to me. Now, there was one job, and it's kind of it really, when I first started out, it really taught me to not give up on something. Because a lot of times you're like, eh, this is going nowhere. But I had one lady come to me and she wanted a painted table. And, you know, I nicely said, that's just not something I do. And I kind of explained to her, typically, if you want a painted table, you're wanting somewhat of a budget table. And that's not the work I do. And I sent her a nice email and she wanted this. Then she went to stain. She goes, actually, you know what? I want it stained. And again, it's like, I don't stain anything. So I just sent her what I wanted to do, you know. And she was talking about mahogany stain, so I try to educate her. And that may sound a little arrogant, but, you know, they don't know what they're seeing when they go to these big box stores or looking through magazines that says cherry, and then, you know, it's not. It's a stained cherry. So, basically I sent her a sample. I said, here's what I think this table looked really nice. And I sent her a design and I figured she'd say no. And she wanted turned legs. And this was just, I was like, going to leave this job alone. And she came back and bought the job. So it's, I think if you can guide your clients as much as possible and do that in a very, you know, diplomatic way, don't be arrogant like some people I know.
Yes. Yeah, I can't imagine who you're talking about.
That mech woodworks guy.
Yeah. The guy that changed his name on Instagram.
Yeah. So if we, I change it to I love Phil Morley.
Again.
I'm ignoring the cease and desist letters. But so if we actually,
are restraining orders.
Restraining orders. If we circle back to something you said, it sounds like. What you're saying is that, you know, what you really need to get started when you're designing is to have some type of limitations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's something that I talked about with Joe on the previous episode of the podcast, that it all starts with sort of limitations and having to, because like you said, if someone just came and said, make me a cabinet, you really wouldn't even know where to begin.
Yeah, I hate that. Even for myself, I'm like, I'm going to design a line of furniture. I need to tell myself, okay, what am I starting with? A coffee table. Let's go. And then, you know, start from there. But I just won't be able to get anywhere because there's so many things I want to do. I just need to start with some, you know, the height, the width, the length, and then go from there and look at the proportions and stuff and kind of work with it.
All right. Going off what you...
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
Damn it. Don't talk over me. This is a podcast. My next question for you is going to be how many or what's a common mistake you see?
No, that's not
new
a good,
people.
No, that's
damn
not
it.
A
he was
question.
Talking about width and length. Yeah, so but, I was. Oh, wait. That's a different. Go ahead. Yeah. What were you going to say?
Could you guys get your shit together?
Yeah, we're working on it.
But then he said the next thing he goes is to after he has limitations and he has some idea of like it's got to be this, that or that. He goes to proportions. Which right. is like the sort of the next thing that I was going to ask him is like once you have this basic set of parameters, what's the first thing you begin thinking about? And
yeah, you want me to answer that?
Well, it's proportions, right?
Yeah, it's excuse me. Yes, it is. It's proportions, and I think at the beginning, you know, it used to be golden ratio or what, like I used to try to follow these set rules, but not follow them, but kind of double check myself.
Yes.
Like, okay, how something looks a little off. Let me just check it. And it's like, okay, yeah, you know, go a little longer, a little higher, and work at it as you see it. Think about it in the place and how it's going to be seen. But I think over time, like, I don't know, I may be a crap designer, but you train your eye. And most of the time, and I design a little bit differently, and I'm sure we may get into that a little bit later on, but it's been a progression, you know, how I design things. But now it's very much kind of starting out with a few measurements, few standard measurements, depend on the piece. Like a chair, there's standards, and there's a reason there's standards on a chair or a coffee table or side table. But then I will start trusting that my eye. If it looks kind of odd, I'm just going to start messing around with those measurements and proportions until it feels good to me, until it looks good. And it's pretty rare that I ever go back and try to, you know, do the golden rectangle. I'm probably saying all that wrong, but
it's the golden arches.
The golden arches.
Yes.
The golden. No, it's the golden bridge.
Golden shower.
No, don't.
But I think you need to train your eye and trust your eye, and hopefully your eye's good.
Yeah. Well, you can train your eye, you know,
yeah.
by looking
yeah.
at things that are well designed.
Right.
So, well, okay. So, Joe, go ahead and ask your question now.
I don't remember what it was.
You know, something about common mistakes that beginners make or something.
Yeah, in terms of proportion and scale, do you see a lot of mistakes there? I know you teach, so I don't know if you ever go off that, or do you see mistakes
yeah.
made like that? Or what
I mean,
is a
I
common
do.
One, I guess?
I do, but, you know, if you look back at some of the stuff like I did early on, it's kind of right there too, you know? So, it's hard because a lot of students don't see that. Like the focus is on, you know, how do you build this? How do you mill lumber? How do you cut joinery? Never grain selection, which is to me is huge for design, and never proportions. You know, they just don't. So what I used to do is I would just look at Tom Moser's catalog, you know, and his stuff is fantastic. And he's got proportions very well dialed in. And I think just doing that again and again and using some of the tools that you have to you to help with proportions, you start just like it's a skill. It's something you learn over time. A lot of times I see stuff and it's either, you know, if you look at it as like a rectangle, the proportions might be right. It's a good height, like a, I don't know, a couch table. Good height, good length. But then the individual parts, they tend to stop. Like they did their little mathematic thing and then they stopped to continue it through with the individual
yeah.
parts.
You have to yeah. strike a balance or a harmony in the piece as a whole. It's not just the
yes.
overall proportions, it's also the proportions of individual parts as they relate to the whole and as they relate to each other, right?
Yeah,
I mean
absolutely
yeah.
yeah.
And I see this all the time when people woodworkers make copies of my boxes.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
Stuff is off.
Half inch thick sides.
Yeah, really thick sides, and you know
yep.
things like that that are just really far off of how
yep.
I did it, which makes it look elegant and graceful. And
right.
it's that you've got to when you're designing for proportions, you have to design everything for proportion. It's not just, you know, it's the overall size, it's the thickness of the sides, it's the size of the handle, how much of a reveal you have.
Everything. How it all relates to each other.
Right. It's a lot to keep in your mind at once.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is, you have to, that's why if you're going to be, you want to learn to design, you start with simple things that are don't have as many parts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Less to keep track of.
And you know, it's a funny thing too, because we kind of.
That's why I'm still making boxes, because I'm pretty much dipshit.
You haven't moved past the box making. But there's another thing too that you see, and I was blown away. I recently spoke with Adrian Ferrazzuti, which is someone I think is an amazing furniture maker. He's in Canada.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
He's amazing and super nice guy. And one of his pieces, which I love, and I'm probably going to screw up the name, is, I think it's a Luna chair, or the Luan chair. I can't remember it now, but it's a Wingate chair, very delicate looking. And to me, the proportions are beautiful. And when I was talking to him about that chair, you know, here's a guy that's been doing it for a long time, and I would say it's just one of the, you know, the best designers out there. And he said when he first did that chair, everything was so delicate, and that's what I love about it, but how that can sometimes be a bad thing, because people, he said he had at shows and people wouldn't want to sit on it.
Right.
You know, it looked too delicate. It was strong enough, but he said over the years he's beefed it up just a little bit, and you know, like just a 16th or an 8th inch makes a huge difference on a piece like that, especially on a chair.
Right.
And I thought that was just really interesting. So I think it's something you're continuously learning, and there's times where I think my mentor would always say, I like to, you know, kind of have things look a little harsh and almost not welcoming. You don't want to sit on it, or like things would be angled. And I think that's just something you learn over time. You take that into consideration too.
Yeah, I didn't say that about your furniture. I said that about you.
Oh, maybe he was saying that too. Well, I'll take that. That's a compliment.
You know, Garrett Hack is a master of proportions and making things delicate that aren't necessarily delicate. They appear to be delicate.
Yeah.
Right.
He's written some really good articles about that. He did one, which I edited, about making things strong, but also graceful and delicate.
Yeah. That's something beginners don't get. But I think that comes from many, many years of building stuff too.
It does. Like
actually building stuff. Because you realize, you know, that tapered leg, the beautiful four-way tapered leg, everybody wants to leave at 7/8 at the bottom, you know, and it's like, you see, you can push it, you know, like it could be a 1/2 inch or 5/8 by 5/8 tapered to the bottom. It's plenty strong and it looks beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Garrett inspired me to push dimensions, to their limit, to make things, you know, more and more and more delicate. You know, when people find out that a lot of my small boxes have sides that are only 3/16 of an inch thick.
Yeah, that blew me away.
Yeah, it really is mind-blowing. By the way, Phil, 3/16 of an inch is roughly 4.
You're looking at calculator?
No.
No, he's not.
Conversion?
No, I'm not doing the conversion.
But it's coming out real slow.
It's coming out real slow. It's 4 governors thick.
It's 4 governors thick.
I'm just trying to think of some appropriately absurd British terminology. Huh? I just started my second beer, which, by the way, tonight we are drinking Farnham Ale and Lager, Mr. Fox Red Ale.
It's delicious.
Wait, you guys didn't tell me. Hang on.
Oh,
Phil just opened up a can of Mellow Yellow.
I am drinking sparkling water lime.
Ooh, all lime. Right.
The grocery store brand or like a name brand?
No, it's grocery store.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's grocery store.
I got 4 kids, remember?
Sorry. All right, enough about your kids. So what we were talking about is the importance of nailing proportions, not just overall, but in all the parts of the piece as well. And I just, because I know I think about this, and I think you do as well, how does your lumber selection and grain selection play into the overall design? Like, how important is it for you in terms of design?
You know, I don't typically think of the lumber when I'm designing, because maybe I'm boring, but most of the time I know what I'm looking for. I know it's going to be clean, straight grain, and not a whole lot of contrast. So for the overall design, when I'm building the piece, it's incredibly important, because I think if you're not careful about selecting your grain or the particular type of woods that are going to go together, if it's going to be a slight contrast or not, it can have a huge effect on the design. It can make a design not look good at all.
Yeah, you and I are very similar in our taste for grain, and I think it's because we have very similar design eyes, in that we like clean designs, straight lines, things like that. And and there you do need straight grain, because if it's not straight grain, it breaks, it disrupts the lines and the shapes. It fights against it rather than harmonizes with it.
And you know, I know this is kind of cliche, and probably a million other furniture makers have said this, and I probably heard it or read it somewhere, but to me it's that whole idea of it goes with design, and yes, the grain wood selection is a huge part of the overall design proportions. It all matters, but I don't want it screaming at you. You know, I don't want it to be shouting at you from across the room. I want you to get there and then start realizing, oh, this is a really beautiful piece, and exploring it. But it's not going to jar with you, because if you're, especially like with legs, I see that like beginners not paying any attention to grain selection when they're picking out legs.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got quarter sawn coming out of one face, riff, or, you know, plain sawn out of another. And it's just, it jars with you. So it's a huge thing. I spend a lot of time when I'm picking out the lumber for a particular piece, but it usually doesn't change. I'm always looking for straight grain. You know, depending on if it's a cabinet and stuff, I do like some contrast, but not a lot. And keep in mind, you know, the piece is going to oxidize, and, you know, a lot of these woods people are mixing up are going to just be brown after, you know, 30, 40 years.
Like Purple Heart.
Yeah. I like Purple Heart.
I know you do. You make everything Purple Heart and figure and, yeah, purple. And Tiger Maple.
Tiger Maple, yeah. But honestly, I am boring, and I'm very much just like you, Matt.
Phil Borley.
But that's what I like. That's the worst joke ever. Quit saying that.
That's the best joke ever.
No, it's not.
I find it somewhere in the middle.
You know, it's funny, because my 5-year-old said that same joke.
Did he really?
No.
That's because he's hilarious.
Matt's humor is at a 5-year-old level.
You'd take that as a compliment, wouldn't you?
I would, yes. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that a lot of people. So I think there was a period in furniture making, and if you go back and look through old issues of fine woodworking, or old copies of the design book that was put out every 2 years by fine woodworking, you'll see there was a point in time where, and I still see people doing this. They use fancy woods as a crutch.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if I have this spectacular piece of figured wood in the piece that I'm making, then that's all I need.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's not. You need to
have... It can be really overdone. And I've seen it where it's like the entire piece is made out of incredibly highly figured wood. And, I mean, I'm not going to lie, like my mentor, you know, one I worked with, one of like just an incredible, incredible craftsman. But that is where we differed. Like, he really likes the figured woods. Like, he loves figured cherry and the whole piece. And it's amazing. It is beautiful stuff. But I'm like, if I'm going to use it, I want it to accent the piece. I don't want it to just overwhelm the piece, you know? And that's just, his client likes it. They're buying it. So there's that.
Right.
So an example.
It's not my taste.
An example of accenting with figured wood. Like, what's an example that you would use that for?
Well, you know, depend on the piece, but even like something like my lounge chair, which I don't know if that's a good example, but typically a cabinet piece. So if it's the doors, you know, maybe I'll have the door panels out of some figured wood.
Gotcha.
But typically I'm not a big figured person. So if it is going to be figured, it's going to be pretty subtle.
You said you're not a big figured person.
Yeah, you're not. You're more of a you're sort of a straight gang, straight grain kind of guy.
I'm pretty straight, slender. You know.
Yeah. But I'm with you on that. Like figured woods for me have got to be used in small amounts. You know, like drawer fronts maybe. And when you do it, like if you're making a cherry cabinet and you want to somehow like make a little bit of a pop, use figured cherry for the door panel.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that gets
I think people get it wrong a lot of times. Is you can get contrast by using the same wood, but just a different cut. And that's what really makes a difference.
Well, that's the thing. I hate the term contrast. I like to say complementary.
Complementary.
Yeah. Do you know that? Do you know that word?
You have a PhD.
I have a PhD. I just want to, you know, your lounge chair, which I've sat in, and I'm sure you've heard many, many people say that it's an amazing chair. I just wanted to personally tell you, it is the worst chair I've ever sat in.
Dick.
Oh, that's a great. I love that chair. You know I do. Yeah. So, Phil, we don't cuss on this podcast.
Oh, sorry.
So much bleeping. So much editing.
Yes. We're just gonna bleep out everything you say.
Yeah,
I'm from England, and those are not cuss words in England. So.
No, not only from England, you're a chav, right?
I'm a chav. I was a chav. I will cut you.
Yeah. All right, we should get back on track.
Yes.
All right, so
nobody's listening, so don't worry.
Yeah, just the three of us,
and the two people that showed up to our happy hour.
Yeah, well, no, we had like eight people show up.
Yeah, but like it was like guys that brought their buddies with them. I had no idea about woodworking.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a good time, though.
And there was a woman there. That was nice.
Yeah. That was good.
Yeah, very nice. So we talked about proportions, grain selection, lumber selection, contrasting versus
complementary.
When do you think about joinery?
I try not to let the joinery get in the way of the design, because I know for the most part I can figure out how to build the piece. So I'm gonna just design what I think looks cool and awesome. No matter what the joinery is. I mean, it's always in the back of your head, right? Once you've built a lot of stuff, it's kind of stupid to say, I just design and don't worry about it. It's always there. So when I'm designing, I am thinking about it a little bit, but I don't let it get hung up on it.
Right.
So that comes more, you know, I'm going to start with just a sketch, a real crappy sketch, and I cannot draw to save my life. And then, you know, I'll start developing it a little more. If the client kind of likes it and have given me the green light, that's when I get into the joinery. But I do all the joinery. I have it pretty much figured out before I go into the shop. And that's probably why I differ from a lot of furniture makers. And I think it depends on what you build. You know, if you're just building small cabinets or little boxes, you don't have to worry about that.
I never worry about joinery, ever. Ever.
But you know, like if you're building like these complex china cabinets or something, or buffets, or even chairs, before I go into the shop, I want to somewhat know what I'm doing. I'm not going to let that just, if I see something as I'm building it, I'm going to change it and work with it. So I'm not just going to be super rigid to it. But the joinery comes later on down the line.
Yeah. I think the more complex the piece is, the more you have to think about joinery ahead of time.
Right.
Yeah, but for me, like me, I never worry about joinery. It's just like, I'm like, oh, well, that's going to be a dovetailed case. And it's like, I don't really have to think about dovetails, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think if the design, if it's going to change the design, then yes. But if it's some type of, you don't see the joinery, then I'm not really having to think about it because it's not affecting the design. Now, if it's a piece that, hey, so these clients want to see the tenons coming through, or they want the case, they don't want a waterfall edge, they want dovetails or hidden dovetails or then I'm thinking about it. But I think a lot of times people, they think about it too much and they let it get in the way of the design of what they really want to build. And so I'll design what I really want to build, then I can figure out how to do it. But that's probably just the experience that I have because I've built a lot of stuff. So I know I can figure out how to build it. That's not my concern.
But I think also there's another way. I mean, some people design to emphasize joinery.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Yeah, and I don't do that. You don't. I mean, but like Pekovich does it, and he does it fantastically.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's amazing. Yeah. So I guess you and I have been sort of talking. I guess the next question I have for you, and I think this is a question that will benefit Joe.
Great.
Yeah.
Glad I could be here for this. I'm soaking it all in, man.
Yeah, because Joe.
This is fantastic.
Every episode, Joe's asked me the same question. How are babies made?
Oh, yeah.
And you have four.
Yeah.
So I think that you can explain that to him. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you can go to my YouTube channel.
Is that YouTube? Or
YouTube is blowing up right now.
Yeah. So, because we're talking about this like from the perspective of two people who've made a lot of stuff. So if you were going to tell Joe what to think about as he's designing a tea cabinet, like what are the like some basic bits of advice you would give him? Not even basic. Just what's some advice you would tell him to help him get through like the first time he designed something for himself?
I guess, you know, like one of the things would be, for at least for me, and it would be true for you, but to think of the function of it, you know, because a tea cabinet, I don't know if you guys have gone into that, but is it going to be hanging on the wall?
Right.
Is it more of a box? Is it a tray type tea cabinet thing? I mean,
I thought you said you listened to the podcast.
God. I haven't listened to the last one. You guys discussed all that, I guess.
Yeah, we discussed it, but that's good. You think about the function.
Think about the function. And then I'm just gonna start drawing like little crappy sketches. I'm not gonna get caught up on the fact that I can't draw. And I'm not even right about necessarily proportions. They're gonna be small. And sometimes some of those crappy sketches end up. I start seeing stuff in the crappy sketch. Like, okay, that was meant to be a straight line, but it's kind of arc. That would be cool. But just really draw a lot of them and. You know, just fill up pages of different ideas until you get something that you kind of like. You kind of like the direction it's going. And then, you know, once you think you like it, I'll draw that same piece again, probably, you know, 20 times.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking super detailed drawings. These are just outlines more than anything to work. Because you can just shift like the drawers around and the dividers and the thicknesses. Like you can change a lot within the overall design that's going to really change that piece dramatically.
Right.
So that's, I don't know if that was helpful, but that's kind of what my approach is. I'll just keep playing with it.
No, that's like I go about it the same way. I actually sort of had a design for a tea cabinet in mind. And then I started, because I told Joe to go and sketch, I started sketching some more. And I did another like 35 or 40 sketches, little quick line sketches, just doing things like, well, here I have two drawers oriented vertically. What if I make them horizontal?
Right.
Here
right,
I've got
right.
cubbies for teacups arranged this way. What if I just, you know, change them by, instead of being four square, if I make them in a straight line, you know, just like small little
it's like
changes.
Make it asymmetrical or like, have a negative or positive spaces, like just play, like almost get out of the concept too that, okay, it needs to be functional, but maybe you can add a little element in there that's not as functional, but it makes the piece beautiful or a little more artistic, whether it's like just an open, like a total open cubby for maybe your favorite teacup, or you have a cool little teapot, you know, something like just trying to get out of the concept that, okay, this has to be, you know, four drawers or, you know, and just keep messing with it.
Right. Yeah, for me, one of the things that when I started to do tea cabinets, one of the first things I thought of to make them different from just like a bank of drawers or, you know, like a little box with a lid was, I want to use the tea cabinet as a way to show off a beautiful piece of pottery, whether it's a teapot right. or tea yeah. cups, or a set, you know, a tea set.
Right. right.
So it's like, yeah. how can I design something that's both functional but also serves in a way of like a museum pedestal?
Absolutely, right, right. yeah. And you, know? You do that really well. You know, obviously building 52 boxes, get pretty good at designing boxes, but
well, I don't know, think that's some what of you the do Amazon well. Reviews, little, I kind of suck at it.
I might have to those do little that elements you add, you know, even with like the shadow gaps and, you know, obviously the paint pop and stuff like that, like just take it to that next level of not it not just being a box.
Well, that's the thing. You have to think about details, every detail,
right.
every single detail. You have to drill down and keep designing until you have addressed everything about that piece of furniture or that cabinet or whatever it is, you know, all the way down to, you know, if you're me, it's like a fabric selection.
Yeah.
You know, you have to right. think carefully about the fabric selection. Or if you're going to like milk paint the back panels, is it going to be yeah. a single panel? Is it going to be a shiplap panel? Like right, right. all of these things you have to think about.
Yeah. And edge treatment. Like, that's the thing I like. You know, I like clean lines for the most part, but I don't like just necessarily just harsh. Like, I always like to add a little touch where you can tell it's been done by hand, but like just small little thumbnail, fingernail edge. But play with the edges and the end grain. Like, treat end grain as an accent. You know, like, if you sand end grain well and polish it out, it pops and it looks beautiful.
It does, yeah.
And it just, to me, it's like it adds that little touch of, you know, this was thoughtfully done, you know?
Yeah. That's good. I mean, it seems like you and I are very... sometimes like Mike and I would try to have conversations like we're supposed to disagree about something, right?
And you wouldn't.
And we couldn't because Mike and I think so much alike about things, generally speaking, even though we have very vastly different.
I hate milk paint.
I know you do. But that's
nice.
That's because you're disgusting. British. And
they don't like milk.
Well, we used milk paint heavily in the colonies.
Oh.
And he's still a little upset about the outcome of that war.
What war?
You're a U.S. citizen now. You better get on board. Get your fife and drum.
They asked me. I refused to answer any of those questions during my immigration test.
Which questions? Did they ask you about making gun cabinets for Jesse James?
And then they just said, go ahead. You're fine.
In Texas, they're like, yeah. You need to make more, boy.
You've passed.
The oh, last part of the citizenship test in Texas is you have to drink an old spit cup of chewing tobacco.
Did you pass?
Yes, I did, and it's actually delicious.
That sounds awful.
It's a red Solo cup.
Oh, God.
Sounds terrible.
I may have done that once in college by accident. It was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Someone's Coca-Cola.
exactly.
All right, boys. We better keep it on track, right?
It's our podcast. We can do whatever we want.
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting to, like, we're over 40 minutes now. We probably should start trying to wrap
it up. So I got one last question
for
you.
All right, ask a question.
It's not that great, but I'll ask it anyways. When in the design process are you like, this is it? I guess it's for both of you, Matt and...
Well, actually, someone asked us this last time. It's like, how do you know when enough is enough? How do you know when you're there?
Right. You know... Man, I sometimes get overly excited, and sometimes that can be, you know, good. You know, it's like, hey, I really like this piece, but sometimes I probably should spend a little more time trying to dial it in a little bit.
Are you still talking about furniture?
But for me, it's just I'm always thinking about it too. Like, if I'm driving or I'm traveling, I'm always going to be thinking about the design. And I get pretty excited pretty fast. So if I just, you know, do 10 sketches of it or so, I'm just gonna, I know, like, it's hard to explain, but I just know when I'm excited and I can visualize. And a lot of times it's not even in the sketch. A lot of times it's in my head. I'm like, okay, I don't need to keep pursuing this. I know what it's going to look like when I get in the shop. And then when you have it in full, you know, it's happening in front of you. That's when I try not to be too rigid with, cause I design a SketchUp, and I know a lot of people don't do that, but I really like designing a SketchUp. But what it does, what it doesn't do is it doesn't give you a realistic idea of the scale necessarily. Like, I've got better at being able to look at it in SketchUp and trust my eye, and sure enough, I'll get it to the shop. I'm like, man, I nailed that. That looks really good. But if I get it in the shop and see it, and it's like, yeah, that needs to be a little thinner, that needs to be not as tall, I'm going to make those changes and mess around with it. So, yeah, it probably didn't answer your question there at all, but I think it's just when I get excited. When I'm in my head, I'm like, man, this piece is going to look killer. And I kind of don't care if someone else doesn't like it. Like, a lot of times you have to have that conviction, because you're not going to make everyone happy.
Right.
And, you know, I try not to ask too much advice from people.
You really should, though.
I know, that's probably why I'm going. I actually asked you, and you said it sucks, so I stopped asking people.
That's not what I told you.
I'm teasing.
And you agreed with me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like that. I showed Matt a picture of a table, and in SketchUp, for it to work for my lounge chair, I had to change the dimensions. It was a side table. My lounge chair is very low. And instead of me going in and like actually changing each element, I just use the scale button. But that doesn't work, because it's just going to, it's pushing it out, and it makes it look chubby.
Right.
And that's the thing Matt said, which, you know, it was kind of a test to see if I was going to be on this podcast. If he said it looked good, I was going to be like, I can't be on this podcast.
That guy's an idiot.
The guy doesn't know how to design.
We have no pre-qualifications to be on this podcast.
So what Phil was saying is actually kind of like the opposite of how I know when it's done. Because he says he gets excited. For me, something is done when it is calm. And I, because like I'll design stuff and I'll be like, there's like a tension in it. And I'm like, that's not what I want. I want my work to be really calm. And so
do you start excited and get calm as you go through the process, kind of thing?
No, it's more just like I draw things and there's just, I feel unsettled. I feel a tension in them. And because I'm looking for harmony and I'm looking for quiet. And I do.
You're not getting out at my house.
No, I know. Jeez, I've been there plenty enough. It's like, holy cow. So I look when I know something's going to work is when it's like there's just like a piece in the piece.
Gotcha.
You know, and it's just like, I'm like, ah, okay, that's it. Because there's no more tension there. There's no more like that could be a little bit different. And but those are hard things. It's not, I mean, what we're describing, I mean, because the real answer is that there is no metric by which you know that something's that
it's done. Right.
It's a sense that you have, a sense that you can develop.
You trust in your eye, you know, essentially, and until you feel good about the piece. And even then, sometimes for me at least, I can get in the shop and I'm like, I'm not real happy with that. But I think that's, I don't know, maybe that's just a curse of a furniture maker, and maybe a lot of furniture makers I know feel the same way, but they're never quite happy with their piece. And I think I've always looked at it as it's how I push myself. You know, I drive my wife crazy. I'm like, she's like, oh, that's beautiful. I'm like, yeah, I could have made this a little different. I could have made that a little thinner.
But you really shouldn't talk about your kids that way.
And maybe I just have never nailed the piece like Matt Kenny every time.
y'all don't see the thousands of pieces that I make that suck.
Oh, I've seen 48 of them.
Oh my god, that's the best thing you've ever said.
That was great. I don't know if we should go any further. That was great.
Phil, you're the best. All right, I don't, have we given, Joe, do you think we get enough practical advice on designing? Talking to Phil?
Not at all.
I think so. Sounds good.
It sounds good?
Yeah, it sounded good. Okay. I sat here and listened the whole time. I liked it. I don't know if I'll listen to it again, but I liked it.
Well, you'll listen to it at least once when you edit it.
When I edit all this stuff.
I hope you will. You have to do some editing.
All right, so before we go, I think it's time to tell a joke.
Okay. Wait, before the joke.
Wait, you didn't approve it with me.
Oh, no. Do we have to approve the joke?
Well, yeah, I told him the one joke. We don't have three things to know. Actually, let's do three things to know. Three things to know about Phil Morley.
Okay, great.
So tell us three things about you, Phil.
That we don't already know?
For real?
Yeah, tell us three things about you. Where were you born?
I'm British.
Yeah, so tell us three
things about me.
Yeah, so three things I want to know about you. Because London's a big town. Specifically, what part of London did you grow up in?
Okay, so I grew up in northwest London, Brent Cross area. So it's off the Northern Line, pretty close to Camden Town.
Camden Town?
Yeah.
Like and the it's song?
Rough part of London.
Yeah. Did you grow up as a rough kid?
I did. I actually got into woodworking because I was going to juvenile prison. And the judge saw that I had a good family and basically said, go to trade school. And that's how it all started.
He saved you then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was 15.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. Now, here's one of my favorite things about Phil is the story of how he met his wife. Can you tell it really quickly?
I can't remember which one I told you. I change it every person I talk to. So
it involved a donkey.
It's an online thing.
Huh?
It's kind of like order a bride.
The story you told me involved Tijuana, a donkey, and 3 pounds of cocaine.
4 pounds.
Four pounds of cocaine.
4 pounds.
No.
I was trying to figure what I told you. You talking about like summer camp?
Yeah, the summer camp.
Okay. All right. Yeah, so I came over when I was 18, and it was the same kind of part of that. I was in trade school, did not want to get sucked back into kind of the gang in my area, and I just went to freaking Maine to teach wood shop.
On a whim, right? Like you went to some
on
type
a whim,
of...
Yeah. Yeah. I just showed up to this like camp. It's called Camp America, and it was a conference thing. You know, I'm heavily dyslexic. I'm thinking, what am I doing? They're not going to hire me to teach anything. And sure enough, they had wood shop. And I was like, hey, I'm in my like third year or whatever it was at the time in trade school. So signed up, wasn't sure what the heck I was signing up for. It was a camp for inner city kids in Boston, Maine. So some really, really tough kids. I was hired to teach wood shop. I had
the
way
kids
too
came
many
from
people.
Boston to Maine, right?
Yeah, they got shipped up, you know, in a bus and get them out of a bad city where they lived at least. And this camp was really strangely structured. The kids could sign up for their own classes, what they wanted to take. So my wife, or it wasn't my wife then, but Carmen was hired to teach classical music. You could probably guess how many kids from inner city Boston wanted to take classical music. None. but they did. They did want to take woodshop. So I ended up having a bunch of people. And one day before class, I was prepping for class. And sure enough, the students came way too early and distracted me. And I had a kickback on the table saw. A piece of wood flew back and hit one of them right between the eyes. Knocked her on the ground. I had all these inner city kids telling me I was going to get killed by the whatever her brothers are part of this gang or that gang. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I need to get out of here. So I was leaving. I was going home.
Legit, you're getting out of there.
Yeah, I was like, this, I'm out. Like, what the heck did I sign up for? Oh my God, you Americans are crazy. And basically, the camp turned around and said, you can leave, but you have to pay your own way. So I had no money, and I stayed. And they said, you know, it's our fault, not yours. We will give you an assistant. Do you have anyone in mind? Well, I had my eyes on Carmen from the first day I met her. It wasn't the best, you know. So I said, hey, what about Common? And yeah, the rest was history.
Yeah.
The girl that had no class.
Yeah.
Perfect for Phil. Sorry, that wasn't intended to come out like that. Wow.
Phil's wife is lovely. Carmen is lovely. All right. So the third thing about you, which, because this story goes on, so you met Carmen and you eventually get married, but Carmen and I have a connection. Do you remember what it is?
Oh, that's weird.
Wait, give me a minute. It's Swanee.
Yeah. Carmen and I went to the same undergraduate school.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it's totally insane.
She did, I think she did a year and then transferred to Brown.
She got smart.
there were too many parties going on at Swanee.
Yeah, Swanee's a big party
place. You're in the middle of nowhere and you just party all the time.
It is, yeah. It's on top of a mountain, and all people do from Thursday till Sunday is drink.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's why I did so well there.
I can tell. And what are you doing now? You're drinking.
I'm drinking, pretty much. I drink and I make furniture.
There you go.
Same thing I was doing in college, drink and work wood. All right, so now we got the joke. All right, this joke is going to involve Phil. All right, so Phil, why did the chicken cross the road?
I'll just laugh. I don't know.
Get to the idiot's house. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
It's me, the chicken.
It's the worst joke ever. It's so bad.
They're slowly getting worse and worse.
Yeah, I feel sorry for Joe.
Slowly.
You should probably just stop the jokes.
I've actually got an email or two about that.
Just saying stop it?
Yeah, I don't care. Really? I'm telling horrible.
Well, that's where they went wrong. If you're going to tell you to stop, you're not going to stop.
No, of course not.
I'm going to tell horrible, horrible jokes, and I'm going to love it, every minute of it.
Well, I think we set a precedent going forward, too, that anybody else that's a guest on our podcast that has thick-rimmed plastic-rimmed glasses,
yeah.
I think we all look pretty good in them.
Eventually, I'll tell the chickpea and linsey joke.
I think people are going to be...
But not this episode.
Don't do it. Nice.
So what I want to know is, when you said you told that joke to a bunch of women, and you said they laughed, I was like, probably out of discomfort.
The chickpea and lentil joke?
Oh my God, did he just say that?
No, I'm joking. Anybody that has a sense of humor loves that joke.
It's pretty good.
It's a great joke. Yeah. So,
all right. It's okay.
All right, Phil. Hey, Phil, thanks for being our first guest on the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Appreciate it. Phil, where can we find you? Heard you're doing a podcast yourself as well.
I'm in my house right now.
No, not now. I mean, like, on Instagram, websites.
Are you wearing pants?
I'm on Tumblr.
I'm on Timber.
Timber.
I actually missed that joke. Went right over my head. Sorry. I heard that it happened to a lot of people. Yeah, I was like, that's pretty good. Yes, Instagram, Philip Morley Furniture. We have a podcast, me and two other gentlemen.
Called the Philip Morley Podcast.
The Philip Morley Podcast.
Philip Morley Rocker. It's his band.
We're actually working on it right now. We're going to change the name to Philip Morley Podcast. it is the Woodworkers Podcast.
And I've been on it.
You have? Yeah, that was a mistake. What else? Yeah, that was awesome. We try to interview, kind of like you're doing, other woodworkers and stuff. So it's fun time, not professional at all. Yeah, that's about it. My website, Philip Morley Furniture. I do have a YouTube channel, but I really don't do anything with it. Philip Morley Furniture.
You should. I was watching it. What the hell, Phil?
Yeah, Phil. That's where you show people how to make babies.
It takes too much time.
In England, when you make babies, it involves a roast lamb and potatoes.
I don't know.
And some HP brown sauce.
Yes. HP. Oh, I've had the brown sauce. That's good.
And a little bit of spotted dick.
You hope you don't come out with spotted dick. All right. Jeez, you sucked me into your
vortex of stupidity.
No kidding.
All right, Phil.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for being on the podcast, and I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. All
right, man.
Yeah, because I'm going. I'm coming down. I'm the first ever visiting teacher
at
the
yeah.
Austin School of Furniture and Design.
Yes, and I probably should have mentioned that. I'm also involved in Austin School of Furniture and Design.
Nice.
Yes, which you can find on Instagrams.
Yep. And the Texas Woodworking Festival, which you can find on Instagram too. So Matt will be there for that.
I will be
there.
When
is that? Is that when you're going this time?
That's on April 6th, 2019. Yep. Yeah.
Ooh, nice.
The last Saturday that I'm in Austin. Yeah.
Should be fun. I'm going to start making a bunch of Cameco blocks.
Oh, yeah, that's right, for my classes.
Yeah,
my class is sold out in less than 24 hours.
That's impressive.
It is impressive.
Like,
you know?
Two people, you and Phil.
Me and Phil.
Yeah, it's just me. Man. It's just me.
I'm not even going to show up.
It's my children, like my family, that signed up.
I'm going to get bad for you. Brisket and get drunk.
Feels like great.
I know. I'm like, man, this is going to be bad.
It's a bad idea. Yeah.
All right. Well,
awesome. Thanks, Phil.
Thanks, Phil. I'll talk to
you
later,
guys.
Man.
Take care.
All right, so that was Phil Morley. And tune in for the next episode when Joe and I are going to the lumberyard.
Yeah, buddy.
All right, goodbye, everybody.
See you.